What is up, everyone? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are here bringing you a classic Tuesday night. No Alex Zalbin, no Daddy. That means it's going to be perfectly done in every way. Pete, how are you doing? Before we started, Pete's only words to me were, I can't wait for T-Day. He's going to put on a show of eating. Is that what you said?
You put on an eating display on Thanksgiving. That's the beautiful thing about it. You know, there's just a wide array of sides and delicious, treats and meats and cheeses and all sorts of stuff, you know?
Really great. Wow. What a thing to look forward to all year. And when you say display, are you say you're eating in front of your friends and family to the point where it's like a problem? It's a concern.
Every year. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the nice thing about it. You eat until you're like, man, I should stop eating. And then maybe you do like a lap and then go back to eating. You know what I mean?
Wow. What a vision to kick off the show with for everyone in the audience.
This is why I don't share things. You guys use it against me.
I'm not using it against you. You're the one talking. I'm not in charge of you. You're
you teed me up. You know, I said something to you in private, and now here we are.
That's called asking a question. That's also called friendship. But we have to get to the show.
Oh, my God. It's a packed show. Let's get to it. It's a great show.
It's a very exciting show. We have some great guests, and we're going to kick it off with some folks that I'm super excited to have out here. They do a show called Batman High Volume.
Yeah.
They are voice actors in this show. Please welcome out Shelby Young and Will Friedle.
Woo-hoo-hoo!
Here we go.
Yes. Welcome. Hi.
Hello.
How are ya?
Oh, man. So excited to have you guys on the show. You guys are living many people's dreams. Get to be voice actors. That's the greatest thing. Plus, for superheroes, I mean, this is just, it's magical to talk to you.
Kind of the best thing in the world.
Yeah.
Great. Well, that was the first question. What's the best thing in the world?
That he
already but more seriously, tell us about the show, because it's a really fun idea, and you guys are sort of coming in for your piece of it, if you could set it up for us.
Go ahead, Shelby. Take it away.
Also, hi, Will. I haven't seen you in so long.
I know. It's been a while. Nobody gets to record with anybody anymore, so you just kind of go, hey, we're doing the same thing together, but you don't actually get to work together anymore.
Yeah.
So you said the best job in the world. It is the best job in the world, but the only better job would actually be being Shelby Young would be the better job.
Wow. Only one person could be that. You know what I mean?
Yes.
No, you tell us why. I mean, it was such a cool project, but Shelby, take it away.
Yeah, I mean, basically, DC is adapting a ton of comics into these amazing audio dramas. And when you listen to them, not only are you hearing us voice actors, but it's like a full audio play. You can hear all of the sound effects and everything happening. And it really puts you in the moment of really feeling like you're there. But we came in for our pieces here. I'm so excited that I get to voice Barbara Gordon, Batgirl, and Oracle.
Yeah. Woo!
Will.
I forget who I play. It's
it feels important. It must be important.
I get to play a character that's very near and dear to me. I get to play Nightwing. I get to play Dick Grayson. So I've actually played, believe it or not, I think most people in the DC world know me as Terry McGinnis as Batman.
Yes,
but
of course. Yeah.
As near and dear as Terry is to my heart and has been forever, I'm on my bat chair as I sit here and do my recording.
What a great reveal!
Cape. Little flex there. That was awesome.
Cape, which is great.
Wait! It comes with a cape.
Yeah, no, it's actually a Batman
Incredible.
Beyond cape on my chair.
That is so cool.
I've played Nightwing more than I ever played Terry. So this is a number of iterations where I've gotten to play Dick Gordon, and he's such a cool, complex character, and one that for years was completely overlooked by the DC world. He was always kind of just Robin for a long time, and then man, he's really been taken off over the last 15 years or so. So it's been, it's been really cool. And as Shelby was saying, I mean, when I was a kid, we always say we're so advanced now, but really in a way we're going backwards to some of the most beautiful things ever. And when I was a kid, my dad and I, he used to bring out his old tapes, and we'd listen to like The Shadow and all these kind of cool 30s and 40s radio plays. And we're getting back there. We're going back to that kind of really cool, just let's take a step back to just sound and that kind of sensory feel of you don't get to see the doors closed, but you get to hear the doors closed. You get to hear the footsteps. It's like it's a fully playground. but just now all kind of done with computers. So it's really great. You know, you get to go back to that kind of, I mean, everybody talks about podcasts, which are amazing, but we're all back on the radio. So, you know, we're going back to the things that we loved, and this is just another step in that direction. And I, you know, I don't want to speak for Shelby, but we're just super excited to be involved in something like this. Yeah.
Well, and that's what's so cool about this, because it is like serialized. It's jumping through a bunch of like big, great Batman stories. And you guys, to name it, you guys are doing Nightwing Year One, right?
Yeah.
And which premieres tomorrow. And we actually have a clip.
We have a clip.
We can hear. We never have clips.
This is awesome.
This is great.
So I'm going to play this. I know you.
I'm glad they were actually recording, because sometimes they lie to me.
Yes,
when they
sometimes they lie. Really good. Really good
okay,
work.
Good.
But yeah, here we go. We'll
My alibi?
Cute name for a bar, huh? This place has unraveled more than one felony case. Drinks, snacks, and a dozen people to vouch for your whereabouts during the Morrison Street Massacre. I'll leave Polka Dot Man for the GCPD.
You are having too much fun. So is there more to this misery tour than making Nightwing a household name in all the wrong households?
Gosh, bad girl. Aren't you enjoying our first date?
Whoa, this is nothing like a date.
How about a really cool nightclub?
So cool.
Yeah! Oh my god. That's awesome.
You describing it as a radio play is so accurate. Like, it has that vibe, energy, and it makes it such a more intimate experience, I feel like. But it's especially crazy, and you guys were mentioning this earlier, you guys actually didn't record any of that together.
No?
No.
So talk about that. I feel like a lot of people maybe have heard that, but like in practice, hearing a clip, it sounds wild that you were nowhere near each other when that was happening.
It's insane, isn't it? I mean, that's the mark of a good team, that it sounds like we were in the same place at the same time. We had a great director and a great team behind us who really helped, at least in my recording sessions, and I'm assuming the same for you. We would read opposite, so it is, I am reacting to another human.
Okay.
Your read might be different than how Fred, the director, read it to me. Like, but it's up to them to just piece it all together and make it sound super cohesive. And, I mean, judging off that clip, I'm happy it sounds like we were there.
Anytime you get a bit, because I am a very, very proud nerd. So anytime you get a whole bunch of nerds together that love what they're doing and want to make the best version of it, you get something great. So that's you know, Shelby was saying about Fred. I mean, Fred's like us. Fred's a big nerd. So he wants it to be perfect, and he wants it to be, you know, you want it to seem as if it's seamless and we're in the same room. And unfortunately, what happened was DC, especially back in the day, up to COVID, is you would all record together. There'd be 15 of you in a room and you would read it straight through like a radio play. And then COVID kind of hit and people went, oh, well, maybe it's easier now. Everyone has their own setups that we can kind of record separately, which again is cheaper. And the directors and producers are working so hard to make sure it sounds seamless, but there is something lost for the actors where you don't, you know, Shelby and I don't get to high five and go, great scene. Hey, let's try it this way. Let's try it that way. So it's for us, it's probably not nearly as fun because we don't get to be with our fellow cast, but luckily the product doesn't suffer at all. And we get, you know, and then we get to hear it and I get to be like, oh my God, Shelby's awesome. Batgirl is so great. So,
you're sort of a fan in a way where you hear it together for the first time in the same way that we do.
You just did such a huge piece of it. Huge fan.
That's crazy. And I want to ask, because you both have worked in this world, whether it's Batman Beyond, the other superhero world stuff, or Shelby, you've done so much in the Star Wars universe. It feels like this is a skill set. Like, what is the skill set of being a voice in these type of animated shows and features?
I don't know if it's necessary to these specific projects, but it's just, it's acting ability and it's being able to play and put yourself in those characters' shoes. And I know every actor has different approaches. For me, it really is like playing pretend. I just am able to read a script and put myself there. I mean, these characters that I play are oftentimes a lot more heroic than I think I am in real life, but I can imagine it. And it's like imaginative play when you're a kid, but higher stakes because now it's your job.
Yeah. It's true. Yeah. Andrea Romano, the great director, Andrea Romano, always used to say to me, she used to say, it's voice acting. Funny voices is not the job. It's voice acting. You're actors. That's what you do. And I was kind of amazed at the number of incredible on-camera actors that would come in to do jobs. that right away kind of didn't get it because it's just a different. I was one of them where, you know, I was coming from on screen and I'm sitting next to Kevin Conroy for my first week there. And my instinct was he would say a line to me and I would turn to answer him. You're in the room, and by the third time of doing that, he's like in that voice going, "All right, Will, you've got to make sure it's into the microphone, Will, into the microphone."
It is.
So it's a whole different thing.
Yeah,
it is. We interviewed him a few times over the years before he passed. R.I.P.
He's the best.
But he will pull out the Batman voice whenever he wants to, even if he's like, "I'm just trying to tell you something."
Right over where I record.
It's
my Kevin Conroy picture, and then there's a picture of the two of us over here laughing. I look at it every time I'm in my booth. He's the guy who started it for me, so he was my first acting voice acting mentor. So he's with me every time I step into the booth.
Oh, that's amazing. Thank you so much for sharing that. I'm not a classically trained actor. I feel like if I did get to do this amazing job, I would be doing so much like when you're kind of talking and pretending to be on a motorcycle, I would have to kind of rev it. Is that part of the fun or is that tough because you hit a microphone or like kick something in your office? Like, how much are you so good that you don't have to do this? Like, well, talk to me a little bit about that, if you wouldn't mind.
I move all the time. I articulate constantly. I've been doing this for so long, but still the other day I was doing a job where I was speaking into a dispatch, like police radio. And the engineer had to tell me like, "Shelby, you're blocking the microphone." So Right. No, totally. You're moving around. You're using the space, but you do learn not to hit the mic and not to bump your pants and hit your hands on your sides or clap your hands, any of that.
And don't have your air walkie-talkie block the microphone.
It's true. It depends on who you work with. There's time, like we did Brave and the Bold. Dietrich Bader, when he was Batman, he never moved. He would sit in a lower chair and he just was in the microphone and he never moved at all. And then you're next to like Matt Mercer when we were doing Transformers and he's all like we're like dodging, trying not to get hit by Matt. So it depends on the actor. It depends on the show because but Shelby's right. I mean, there's times where now one of the problems that we had to learn growing up, Shelby is probably too young even for this, is we had paper scripts. So you're
disgusting.
In the middle of you're trying to move
young paper. So Shelby, it's like an iPad, but it's like harder to turn the page.
That's how you describe paper to somebody?
You can't just do your finger. You have to.
Oh my god.
Paper's loud though, so you see everybody in the booth very quietly moving their papers as they're going. Which, you know, for new actors, you don't have to do that. You're just doing this on the iPad the whole time. So there's little things that little tricks of the trade that no longer exist. But
And since you both have worked in the industry for a bit, like, can you talk more about how it's changed over the time? Like now you're doing this podcast that is like a thing that so many people are excited about when that wasn't even a thing, for instance, like when you started, Will. So just talk about like what it's like now and recording at home and all of that.
Shelby?
It's lonelier.
That's true.
I bet.
That really is the main difference that I've seen. I mean, again, I started in the on-camera space as well and then moving over to voice acting, that they're both acting, but they're such different fields, like Will was saying. But the difference that I've seen really is that everything is done from home now. Like even when I first started voice acting, I would go into my agency to record all of my auditions in the booth with a booth director that worked at my agency. Now all of my auditions are from home. A lot of my jobs are from home. I still do go into studios a lot, but like Will was saying, it's often I'm going in alone, even if it is a group scene in an animated show. Self-tapes for on-camera jobs are now self-tapes. You're not really going into offices anymore. Like that's the main thing is technology has evolved to where we can do a lot from home. And I understand why productions would like to use our home studios. I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other big thing that I've noticed is when I first started, especially in the voiceover world, it was the 90s, the mid 90s. And kind of there was a very small group of people that was doing all of the cartoons. Like you would walk in and it's the same 15 of us, 20 of us doing everything. So luckily now it's opened up and it's become far more inclusive for, you know, whether it's people of color or women. It's not three guys that are doing every voice of every cartoon, which is great. So it's kind of like who you know, they're the people that should be voicing the characters are voicing the characters. So that's something that's great, because it was a very, very small exclusive club, which, again, I stumbled into and was total luck to be a part of. So that's another great change. But Shelby's right. It's definitely... It has. Lonely is a great way to put it. It was, for a long time there, it wasn't just somebody alone in a booth. And we've gone back to being alone in a booth. But again, yeah, it's
your booth. Everything is full circle. A booth where you have to be more stressed about, is there sound?
Yeah.
Are they hearing what the noise outside?
Yeah. The good part, though, was during COVID, it was one of the few industries that kept going.
Yeah.
You know, there was more and more animated stuff was done during COVID than I think anything else in Hollywood. So animation really had a boom, which as an animation fan is a wonderful thing, a terrible reason why, but a wonderful, you know, thing to happen was the fact that they're no longer cartoons, they're animated series. And it's about time everyone's seeing them like that. So, I think they're getting their due finally.
What one thing that, like, you know, actors talk about is like costumes help getting into characters. Since you are just using your voice, is it hard to be like Batman in pajamas? Do you have like a phrase that you repeat to help like hold the character for you? Is there any of that going on?
Did you go to the circus a lot?
Exactly.
Yes.
If I'm voicing a legacy character that has a specific sound that I'm like voice matching, there are definitely like lines of dialogue that I'll say to drop into that voice. With Batgirl in this project, and I voiced Batgirl in a previous project, a fun mobile game, I'm pretty much using my natural tone for it. I'm really grateful for that. So really for this role, I just felt like bringing myself to a character that has been around for so long, so honoring that character, but finding how I could be honestly myself within her.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, set. I mean, that's one of the most fun parts about a job, especially if it's a director you've worked with for a long time, is what's called setting the voice. So you can walk in there and they'll be like, all right, you're playing, you know, Dick Grayson. Okay, great. Which Dick Grayson? How old is he? Is this grizzled Nightwing? Is this, and then so it's Nightwing year one. All right, cool. So it's really, are we going pre-Robin? Are we starting where he is one of the amazing Graysons and we're going back really early? So you get to sit there and kind of play, and then it's like, well, no, we want it since it's year one. Grizzled is not right. You know, he's really just finding himself out there. So maybe a grizzled Robin, but not yet a grizzled Nightwing. And so you're playing with kind of every little layer, which gives you places to go. And it can really just be an absolute ton of fun, because at that point, you don't, and it can also get crazy where you walk in and there's two or three of us that sound very similar sometimes in a project. So out of nowhere, they'll be like, all right, well, your character doesn't really have a backstory yet. So now he's Scottish. And it's like, then all of a sudden you got to throw on an accent because you don't want to sound too much like the person standing next to you. So you get thrown these curveballs, which are so much fun in the booth to have to kind of adjust to, because then you're just playing. It's like, all right, who do I have to be now? And there's an energy to it that a lot of times you don't get on camera. On camera, you get the energy from other places. Like you said, putting on the wardrobe, or you're waiting for the studio audience, something like that. You get that amazing rush. But in the booth, it's more about like, let's find the voice. Let's pick where it's going. Oh, is the timbre right? Where, you know, what age are we going? What ethnicity are we going? There's a lot of fun little things to click off to then set where you're finally going to go.
Well, and I got to think that like you're saying in animation, it's like you're Scottish now. And in live action, it's like, okay, your character's now from Minneapolis instead of St. Paul. It's like, oh, very subtle. but you're getting thrown. So what's the accent that you hate getting thrown, and what's the accent you love getting thrown?
I'm not
asking you to do it, but I...
I love a good English accent or a French accent. Mm. Australian and Irish, I get a little a nervous sweat when I get asked. I get a little...
Especially nervous. An Australian director's asking you, like, oh, just pop on.
All right, we're going to do this. This is take 13. You're like, wait, what? For me, it's a lot of the ishes, where it's like Danish. Or if they something in the, it's like the Scandinavian countries, because love everything to me I do ends up just sounding like the Swedish chef. And it's like, that's probably not a good thing where they're like, we need you to be a Finnish doctor. And you're like, but I don't know what to do. And you're like, no, that's terrible.
they're like after you. They're it's after you in bad. Sweden, though.
So, yeah. So whenever you get into kind of the Scandinavian countries and it's supposed to be serious and you want to keep it away from cartoony, that's when my sweats start. Where it's like, oh, no, it's going to be a bad Swedish chef impression no matter what I do. So, yeah.
It is funny that moment where you're like, you're starting to sweat. You're like, okay, yes. Like, yes, I will do this. You just have to open your mouth and be like, did it happen?
Well, they know, as an actor, what they tell you is no matter what they ask you during an audition, it doesn't matter what. Can you fly a plane while on horseback? You're like, yup.
Yes. Sure can.
And you just figure it out when you leave the room. Like, you fake it till you make it. So when they say that, hey, we need you to play a 13-year-old Finnish boy, you're like, sure, I can do that voice. No problem. And then you're Googling as much as you can to try to figure it out.
No,
talk a lot about... Oh, go ahead.
No. I was agreeing. I was agreeing loudly and
well,
late.
Great, because I will throw in the opposite. Because fake it till you make it is really great as long as you make it. But when I was like maybe 15 years ago, I went into a movie we had to skate. It was a hockey movie. And I cannot skate. And I fell down
so
much.
Oh, dude, you're from upstate New York, bro. Come on. That's ridiculous.
Sorry, I wasn't born on ice. I live in the North Belt sometimes. But it's and I did not make it. I failed to skate in that movie.
I've had that same thing happen, literally with an ice skating movie, the same thing.
There are too many ice skating movies.
That's Disney's go-to. Is chances are, if they need to connect something with something, it's like, what can we connect a good baking show with? Hockey. Okay, great. Now it's a baking hockey girl. And it's like, okay. So, I've had that same thing. But you can fake it till you make it. If you could just slide by the camera on skates, then it's up to them to shoot you. You know what you're doing.
Yeah, you have to capture me. Make some magic, Disney.
There was a scene on Boy Meets World where I was skating on Lake Placid with Nancy Kerrigan.
Oh, my God.
I cannot ice skate at all. So they put
what a bucket list moment.
Kneeling on a wheelchair backwards. So, like, I'm kneeling and the back of the wheelchair's here. And they were pushing the wheelchair around with the camera in front of me. And I'm doing this as the wheelchair is going around. So that was up to them to make it look like I could skate. Not up to me to learn how to skate.
Yeah. And you're saying it's flawless on camera, right?
Flawless.
Wow.
As good as Nancy Kerrigan. Thank you very much. Because then they cut to a stunt double. That's their job. So there you go. That's cut them together. And Will Friedle is a great ice skater. That's just how it works.
Amazing. I know you guys have to leave. So we will let you go. Anything you want to shout out? Obviously, the show premieres tomorrow.
Yes. So exciting.
Yeah,
we
can't wait.
Yeah, that's it. I'm stoked for the show. I can't wait to hear it for the first time as well. I'll be listening along with everybody else that's checking it out for the first time.
Me too. And audio stuff is like my favorite thing. So books on tape, podcasts, this kind of... So stuff like this, that where it's now you get my favorite comic book stories ever coming to life like this. And I get to go on road trips and not have to bring my comic books. I can listen to them like this. I'm pretty happy.
Nice. Well, we're such huge fans. Thank you so much for all your work. And yeah, we can't wait to check it out tomorrow.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Good seeing you, Shelby.
Good to see you too.
It's great to connect you guys.
Glad we could make this happen.
This is the wrap party.
Yeah, exactly. Yay.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Will, Shelby, thank you for being here. We'll see you soon. Later.
Oh, man.
So check out their show premiering, the Nightwing Year One premiering tomorrow on Batman High Volume. It's so cool. Very excited. But that was an exclusive clip we got to hear right here. So we got
We got the scoop.
Very fun.
One of the hardest parts of getting older is feeling like something's off in your body, but not knowing exactly what. It's not just aging. It's often your hormones, too. When they fall out of balance, everything feels off. But here's the good news. This doesn't have to be the story of your next chapter. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is an herbal formula made with science-backed ingredients designed to fine-tune your hormones by balancing estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol. It helps with common issues such as hot flashes, poor sleep, low energy, bloating, and more. With over 40,000 reviews and a bottle sold every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. A survey found 86% of women lost weight, 77% saw an improved mood, and 100% felt like themselves again. Start your next chapter feeling balanced and in control. For a limited time, get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com with code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today. and get your old self back naturally.
But speaking of the scoop, let's welcome on our next guest. I don't know if he knows he's about to come out, but Paul, we're going to pull you out here real quick right now. He's waving because he is here. Please welcome out someone we've talked to before, but not in a while, Mr. Paul Pope.
Hey, welcome. How are you?
Hello. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah, can definitely hear. Can.
All right. Hello, world.
Thanks for coming out. So you have a new book coming called The THB. Can you tell us about it real quick?
Total THB is the first of, I'm thinking it's going to be 5 volumes.
Wow.
It's a lot of pages, brothers. It's over 1,000 pages.
Oh, wow.
And I've got Battling Boy and I've got THB. So they're the longest books I've ever done, and I'm never doing this again. Never do that. So Total THB Volume 1 came out last week, and I did 2 book signings in the, you know, one in Brooklyn, one in Manhattan. A documentary film just dropped, I think, yesterday. I can send you a link to it if you want to see it.
Yeah, would love to.
Yeah.
Joe Cabero, the director, is award-winning, and we're submitting it to film festivals, and it's great. And then, you know, it's a return to the beginning. So I feel like sometimes you have to just, you know, break things down to the beginning and start again.
Well, talk about that, because I feel like you're someone who like works so much in comics, but also across so many other industries. Like, mm-hmm. what's your map? Like, what's your direction finder, and why are you now going so hard with these long form comics?
I don't know, honestly. I feel like, you know, your artistic impulse probably takes you in strange directions, and I like the thing Tom Waits says about the crooked tree. Like, no one's going to cut down a crooked tree. You know, you don't make a floorboard out of a crooked tree. You know, they want the tall ones. And so, like, you know, you wind up with a crooked tree. You look kind of weird, but you're also beautiful, you know.
Yeah.
So that was kind of my career path, and I'm probably halfway through, you know, Roy Batty over here, Tears and Rain. Maybe halfway through my career, but I have still a lot of work to do. So I want to, like, there's a point, I've been doing this for a long time. So when you get to a certain point in your career, you need to be your own custodian. Mm-hmm. You know, THB is like my first child, and, you know, we've remastered it, and it's a beautiful edition, and 23rd Street Books, an offshoot of First Second, offshoot of Macmillan.
Yeah.
You know, we're doing it right. And we already have foreign licensing set up. And, you know, so it's like, I don't have any tattoos, but this is like my psychic tattoo. Is this? And then cool. Battling Boy.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I feel like you have 2 children out there right now.
At least. Yeah. At least.
Well, yeah, you've got the older children. You have a lot of children.
You
should never limit your amount of children you're out.
Right. That I know of.
Yes, of course.
I mean, I don't have any. I would love to have a child. I don't have one, but I have books. And so it's like, you know, this is what I do, man. I've dedicated a lot of people. They do more normal things, like they buy an expensive car or like a house on the river or something. And I never went that way. You know, I was too fascinated by Iggy Pop and Jack Kirby. And it's, like, nice. You know, I got my leather jacket. I started walking around Lower East Side, you know?
Yeah.
Cool.
Now, I have a backstory to talk about real quick that I've told on this show a bunch of times. Because, Paul, I used to work at a restaurant named Jolie, and you would print your artwork at Bertrand Delacroix's, I think, gallery next door.
That's right. Yes, I remember.
And,
yeah.
And we had a couple of your pieces on the wall in the restaurant.
Yes, yes.
And so you'd sit at the bar and have lunch while you were, like, working. And mm-hmm. So you were sitting there one day, and we were just talking casually. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'm big into comics. This art behind me is by a guy named Paul Pope. Like, I'm a big fan of his stuff. He's like, oh. And you were like, oh, I'm Paul Pope. And I was like, whoa. Okay, that never happens, where I talk about, compliment someone, and then they're there.
That's the beauty of New York City, man.
Yes.
That is.
That was Atlantic Avenue, right?
Yes,
Atlantic. I remember that place. Yeah, yeah. That was the high point of the day because we would work all day, and I love screen printing. But you know, we would be in there 10 hours, and eventually it's lunchtime, and you know, the team was fantastic, and the master printer was an old friend of mine from college. Believe it or not, I mean, I've known that kid since I think, well, kid, he's now probably 50 something. But I mean, when we first met, we were like competitors. And I was 21. You know, you're a dumb kid. What do you know?
Yeah.
You know, why compete with anybody, really? But yeah, so that's a great memory. But yeah, we gave the restaurant a couple of the prints, and they hung them, and it was hanged or hung. But that was a great honor, and I remember that very well. You guys had some really nice Art Deco sculptures in there too, I remember.
Oh yeah, I mean, Bertrand owned the restaurant, and another, like, he died years ago, RIP.
Oh, I know.
But to finish the story,
I was there for his wake.
Yeah.
Young ladies and gentlemen, don't be a daredevil.
Yes, yes. I will tell the like very insane story. A man who had survived serious illness the year before, and he died. It was a hang gliding accident, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Insane. But to finish the story, so there were like brown placemats, and you, after we'd sat and had a bunch of wine, I was drinking at work, you pulled out your brush pen, and you said, what's your favorite villain? And I was like, give me a second. And I went in the back and like sort of like really had to think about it and not fuck this up. And I said the Minotaur for some reason.
The Minotaur. You're speaking my language.
And you drew
Oh my God.
Wow.
Wow.
You drew this. Pardon the reflection, but I've had this framed. I've had this hanging in my home for years.
That's lovely.
It's.
I remember it's this. Yes, yeah. I remember. The Minotaur is a big, because I got, around the time we met, I got really into Jungian dream analysis. And I identify with the Minotaur in a lot of ways. Like my shadow self is the Minotaur.
Wow.
And so I remember this. And usually
we must have been vibing, because I would have never said the Minotaur. That's a crazy answer to say that.
I don't. It's a tragic villain.
Yeah.
He's like Dr. Doom, you know?
Well, and let me read. You probably couldn't read. Let me read what you wrote.
Okay.
The Minotaur couldn't help being born a monster, but he still suffered the fate of the vanquished.
Yes.
Wow.
And yo, you were sitting there like, you know, three glasses deep, just fucking going. It was unbelievable. It was just a great, great moment.
Hey, that's Brooklyn, man. That's what Brooklyn. We do.
Believe me. That's why people are like, why do you still live in New York? All my friends moved to LA. I'm like, because this is where it happens. This is where you mix it up with people. It's my favorite thing.
Man, I can't tell you that so many times I got to hang out one time. I was printing with Mick Rock, you know, the famous rock and roll photographer.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's sitting on the back stoop smoking a joint and kind of looking at me, and I'm looking at him. He doesn't know who I am. And I'm like, I know who he is. And he's printing like huge David Bowie posters, my hero David Bowie, and Iggy Pop. And he's just looking at me and he's watching what I'm doing. And he's like, oh, you want one of these, do you? You want one? Like, yeah, I'll take one. I have one of mine.
Wow. That's dope. So that's been my self-indulgence. But let's talk about your work. Like, so what goes into putting out Total THB, something that has been, you know, in your mind and coming out of your hands for so long, putting out a volume like this?
Yeah, I mean, over time, I've learned how to be an art director. And I feel like even though I have a great art director, actually, Kurt Bischoff at 23rd Street. I lost
you
guys.
Yeah, no, there you are.
We can hear you.
We can hear you, though. Keep talking.
Wait, did I lose you? Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
We just can't see you for
Hang on a second here. This is not. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we can hear you great.
Wait. This doesn't sound right. Can I call you right back?
Yeah.
Sure.
We'll have to edit this, okay? I'll call you right back.
We're
sorry.
Really good at that. Okay. We're really good at editing.
Okay.
Well,
oh man,
we'll take a brief pause while he. Man, it's funny. I've told that story on this show so many times, but I've never told him.
Yeah, it was something you had to change, and I told him. I mean, you.
You.
You've told that story so many times. You, it was so ingrained, you couldn't even adjust to the fact that you were telling it to him. Well, that's hilarious.
It spoils the reveal when I'm like, and then I told him.
I mean, you. We were like, him? Who else is there?
You are him. Him is you.
Sorry, I'm back.
Hey, welcome back.
Perfect time.
I'm ready for my close-up, Mr. DeMille.
That's good. You are looking crisp.
I've been growing out the beard a bit for the winter.
Yeah,
but
yeah, smart.
It's a look. I guess gentlemen of a certain age and persuasion tend to grow their beards out. So
who are we talking to here? This is a beard.
Yeah. You know what? Yeah, pot calling kettle line too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
but pot calling kettle old is what we're doing here.
No, I don't do that. I don't believe in old. Old is in your mind.
Same.
Old is in your mind.
Shouts to you. You're like, I'm about halfway through my career. I was like, I love people saying that.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. No, I don't. I believe age is in your mind. I mean, I'm going to the gym. So I started that again.
That's a great follow.
No, you can look at a guy like Brad Pitt. Yes, he probably has trainers. I mean, I have a trainer, but you don't. You can defy time, like the age we live in now. Anyway, I believe in longevity, and I believe as an artist, you know, the compulsion to make art keeps you young.
Yeah,
because you're constantly looking for the germ of life, you know, and I don't think there's any reason to live unless you're curious.
Well, I think you got to be chasing something keeps you young. It's when you start to like slow down. I see it in like everyone, every old person. You see them slow down and you're like, and it accelerates their feeling of being old. And like, I'm with you. Like, I will be young until I turn to dust in my dumb mind.
Dude, I already know, you know, one of my first masters was Alex Toth, and he died at the drafting table.
Right.
Wow.
Yes.
And that's what's going to happen to me. I'm going to, one day you're going to, someone's going to show up, not in this apartment. I'll move out of here. But although I like where I live, I have a nice place, good neighborhood. But, you know, just like the last line, like one of these lines is going to be the last line. And it's like, fall over.
Yeah, right there.
That's the end. Yeah, the end. That'll be there. Did you
guys
see that?
Baller last words, the end.
Was it John Keats, the poet, died at 25 from, I think it was tuberculosis or influenza. He was in Rome. He published barely nothing, and his tombstone says, "Here lies a man whose name was written in water." I think that was
Ooh.
It.
Oh, wow.
And like this is one of the most famous poets in the history of Western culture. Imagine he didn't manifest his power. He didn't know to be able to be that age and manifest, right?
Yeah. So to be that young, you're saying.
That young, yeah.
And go out that way, yeah.
Kafka was the same, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, but you were asking about...
yes, we were talking about putting it together.
Yeah, sorry. We got distracted. I got distracted anyway.
Same.
As I was saying, one thing I've learned over time with all the different types of, you know, career hats I've worn, I learned how to be an art director and a producer. Mm. And now a curator, because all this work I've done, it should live. It should live. It should. The stuff that is good should stay. Escapo, for example. Escapo's a hit. It's published all over the world. It's been in print since 1996. Now THB is coming back. And then I've got Battling Boy. I've got one or two things lined up I can't talk about yet. So it's like, it's great. I mean, I'm doing it. But so the mission with Total THB is to put this book, all 1,000 plus pages, into print at a reputable publisher who can do international licensing, great additions. So I went to Ohio. My mom, she graciously allowed me to store all of the THB art in her basement.
Oh, wow.
So, can you just describe how much space that takes up? Because I can't even imagine.
It's about the size of a 17-year-old basketball player.
Very evocative.
So I got a friend of mine to Andrew Foster, is a good friend. He works with me a lot. I got him to bring his van out. I said, "Hey, man, I'm in Ohio. It's about to be a blizzard. We have to drive across the Allegheny Mountains to get back to New York. I have a art storage in Brooklyn." And I'm like, "Will you come meet me?"
We're going to have a day.
And it was. I mean, I went through everything, and I kept all of the artwork. So wow. I went through everything. I found stuff I forgot about. And you know how it is. Like when you did, let's say you guys did something 20 years ago. You know, you don't like think about it too much. You're not nostalgic about something you did 20 years ago.
It's hard for me to stumble across an improv scene in my mom's basement.
Well, I mean, it's just, thank God it didn't flood. I mean,
yeah.
I was worried it was going to look bad. I mean, the first volume is all the work I did 1995, 96. What's interesting is when we get to volume 2, which is coming out in July 2026, which is what, about 8 months from now, seven months from now. I'll probably be at San Diego Comic-Con to promote that.
Oh, awesome.
Cool.
That's when it gets good, because what happened in the meantime is 5 years went by. I got a contract. I started working in Japan. I went deep into manga, and I was training in Japan, hands-on. And it's like the joke I have is the jalopy turns into a Ferrari, and you're in left lane, and now we're 400 miles an hour, baby. This is not street legal. This is not street legal comics anymore.
Well, what's it like to go through and literally see that transformation happening in your work? Like to be like, whoa.
It's
like
kind
that must
of,
be is it feel good or bad? Like I'm sure there's nostalgia, but it must feel
it's strictly. Nostalgic.
Yeah.
No, it's it I mean it's kinda like growing pains, you know, like you know, to return to the metaphor of the 17-year-old. It's like I see what I was trying to do, and like the thing is I just didn't quit. And I didn't think twice about, like, I don't think this looks very good. Oh, I just got to give this up. I'm going to go be a line chef at a restaurant or something. I just was like, I got to keep going. And eventually something is like, wait, this line looks good. This one looks good. Then I go and I look at, like, Picasso or whoever you want to look at, Mobius, in my case, Mobius.
Yeah, right.
And it's like, how did he do that? And you try to, like, retcon it. You know,
right?
And like, oh, I think I know how he did that. Let me try that. You try, you fail, you try again, you fail, you try again, you fail, you try again. Eventually, it kind of makes sense. You're like, wait, oh, okay, I think I know how to do that. And then you filter it through all of your other influences. So in my case, you know, Greek theater and rock and roll and, you know, all kinds of stuff, spoken word poetry and whatever. And then you throw manga into it, and it's like you've got a weird soup.
Yeah.
Weird soup.
And it's a like, weird right, soup.
It's a weird soup. And it's like, all right, well, I think this is kind of making sense. And then people are paying attention. Luckily, the early 90s, the Image guys, for some reason, picked me up.
Right.
Me and Jeff Smith and Terry Moore, for some reason, they really embraced us. And
what a great class, though. What a fun
that was. And Alex Ross and Chris Ware. I mean, wow. Even though Alex doesn't seem to remember that, but you know, I love Alex Ross. He's great. And, you know, we were friends early on and none of us knew anything. We're a bunch of dummies, but it's like, we're like dummies that didn't give up.
Smart.
Right. The ultimate success story. I was too dumb to quit.
I was too dumb to quit. I didn't know. I didn't know I should quit. Yeah. So what it is now is it's the older version of myself looking back at the younger version of myself with tenderness, thinking, okay, like, I know what you were trying to do, and now I can do it. Now I can help you. I can help you, young man.
That's cool.
That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's, you know, thank you, Carl Jung.
Yeah,
all that training, you know? Yeah.
That's awesome.
Not to get too much into your process and whatnot, but like, I feel like you're just pulling from so many different sources. Like, you have your interests that draw in. What are like your new influences? Like, what is lighting you up right now?
That you're Well, I'm trying to get into back into the habit of reading a book a week, and I'm very interested in artist auto. I used to read voraciously. And now you doom scroll, you look at, like, you know, where's the war today? Where's, what the fuck, these pedophiles, like, all this shit. And it's like, all right, well, a good friend of mine gave me a book of interviews with the painter Francis Bacon, if you know him. He's a grotesque, he's, I'm not going to spoil anything, but he's a bit of research for the next project I'm working on.
Okay. And, that's very cool.
And I'm reading what he thinks. And, you know, the hard thing about comics is there really aren't very many role models. Like, at I'm in my mid-50s now, right? There are very few people, you know, who are, like, you can look to as role models. And I look to David Bowie. I look to Miles Davis, you know, with all their faults.
Yeah, right.
I'm reading Francis Bacon right now, and then the next one's gonna, I've got the new book that Dark Horse did of the Mobius interviews over the years. And I heard you say earlier you were listening to a lot of audio. I've got Derek Jacobi's reading of the Iliad. I think I'm gonna re-listen to that. Well, it's interesting because it's in English, but it's iambic pentameter. And it eventually you get into the rhythm of it, and it, I mean, it's a long read. I mean, it's about 20 hours, you know, it's not
long read and a lot of like long action description and just like it's what brutal. Is happening. Yeah. It's a brutal, like, I feel like people are like, oh, that's boring. It's actually like a giant fight almost the entire time.
Everybody hates everybody. It's like Looney Tunes cartoons as an R-rated film.
And literally, they're like Patroclus would be like, "I'm gonna come for you," and then they,
he gets up and has, there's like a speech, and then they get to the fight, that horrible battle at the end with, I'm not spoiling anything. I'm sorry that Iliad is very old.
I feel like that's lightly spoilable.
The battle at the end around the gates of Troy between Hector and Achilles. Achilles is like, I am not fucking around. I'm going to drag this dude's body until it falls apart as your father watches.
All the heroes are like, you know what?
But that's what's interesting. When you get in, let's talk about superheroes for a minute, right? Because like, a lot of our archetypes come from these classic heroes. And when you really study them, they're not very good people. They're amoral. They're jealous. They're greedy. They're killers.
Yeah.
And like, you're like, whoa, I always thought Achilles was like a good guy, but like you read the story and like, this dude is a bad guy.
Well, and like, there's no like, we should do this for the moral right reason. It's like, I'm stronger, so I win. And it's
the whole thing was set up because Aphrodite, Helen, and another one of the goddesses, I forget which one, they were arguing. And I want to seduce the most handsome man. And that happened to be Paris, which was the son, the younger son. And then they stole Helen of Troy, right? Was it Helen of Troy?
Yeah.
They stole the woman, I think it was Helen. And then it launches the war, and it goes on for 12 years. The weird thing is that this story, if it's true, happened on the Black Sea of Turkey. And I believe it's a true story. However, 12,000 years went by before it was written down, allegedly by Homer.
Yeah.
But these, I mean, see, people just, it was like a campfire story. People told the story and like embellished it. And that's the way Batman is.
Yeah.
Like who owns Batman at this point?
Right.
You know, I talked to Frank Miller about Batman all the time, and he calls him a diamond. Batman's a diamond. Like, you can throw him against the wall as many times as you want, and he won't shatter.
Oh, so that's interesting.
Isn't it good? I mean, he...
Yeah, it's a good...
He's very possessive of Batman. If you talk about Batman, he treats him like he's a human. I'm like, you realize this is a character, right? This is not a human being. But we talk about the character a lot, and, you know, voices. Like, you know, I heard you talking earlier with the voice actors, and it's interesting how you can embody characters. And like, we take someone like Batman, he's a character type, or Superman, or Wonder Woman, whoever you want. I saw your t-shirt, by the way.
Yeah.
And yeah, there are different ways to embody these characters, and they, you know, excuse the cliche, but they are modern myths.
Yeah.
Right.
We certainly agree with you.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I was so impressed that you asked for the Minotaur, because at that at that time I was thinking a lot about the character type, the archetype of the Minotaur, and reading a lot of poetry as a sad bastard like me does, and then when I'm not screen printing or drinking wine at your restaurant.
Perfect combination activity, by the way.
I mean, what's the point of living in New York if you're not going to be a bohemian making art?
Hell,
if you're an artist living in, you know, at the time I was living in Brooklyn, I'm in Manhattan now. It's like, what's the point?
Yeah.
If I can't eat a steak at 3 p.m. and drink a bottle of wine, what's the point?
I'm going to do this life. It's working.
Yeah, it's like, I'm just going to, you know, then we go back to work. We work for 6 or 7 more hours. The day's over. Everybody gives a fist bump. We go home.
Same. I mean, I turned to my boss. I was like, hey, I'm going to drink with Paul here. Cool. And he was like, yeah, that's cool. And we did.
Oh, Bertrand. Yeah, we could tell stories about him. No, he was, you know what's cool about him? He was badass. Like, he had Formula One cars in his apartment.
I was at so many of his parties. He had friends from all, like, half his friends like owned parking garages in Long Island. The other half were like top-notch artists. And he liked all of that.
He had a giant pool table, always had a good-looking girlfriend, and his dad was cool. His dad was an artist.
Delacroix.
Yeah, yeah, famous artist, and just an interesting crowd of people, man. That was a really great time. It was just really, that did feel like, you know, like, I love Hemingway, so the Movable Feast, where he talks about all the people he knew, Ezra Pound and everybody, and Fitzgerald and all the people in Paris, and it was like, for a minute there, that part of Brooklyn felt like a Movable Feast.
Yeah. Nice. I around that time I was reading Keith Richards' biography. I think.
Oh, Life. Life, yeah.
And I was feeling that thing of like, oh yeah, just go talk to people from different things, because it makes everyone feel good to hear about what you're doing, what they're doing. People doing interesting things.
Absolutely. There's a great line Richards has where he was regarding younger artists. And he said something like, they'll find out. They'll find out.
Yeah, that dude had elder statesman energy from the time he was like 23. And he was just telling everybody what was up.
Yeah, they'll find out.
Paul, we could talk to you literally all night.
Yeah.
We do have to let you go. We have to keep our show going. But
that's great.
The book, Total THB, the first volume.
Really unbelievable.
Last week, it's on the stands now. People
Thanks,
can
brothers.
Check it out. And then you have so many more pages coming their way.
Oh, yeah, a lot. And a couple things. Let me send you a link to the documentary, which just came up.
Would love to see, yeah.
Yeah.
As I said, we're entering into a film festival next month.
Cool.
And I'm really proud of the film. And the director, Joe Cabero, I think did a great job. And he's an award-winning film director. We spent 4 or 5 days in June, I think. It coincided with the gallery exhibit I had with Philippe Le Bon here in Manhattan, in Chelsea.
awesome.
And book two is coming out in July.
Okay.
And then there will be news on Battling Boy soon, and then this other unannounced project, which you'll be hearing about.
Yes.
Within the next 12 months. My girlfriend calls it the Sailor's Handshake. It's like, meaning it's never coming out.
Yeah. Okay. Sailor's Handshake. That's funny.
A Sailor's Handshake. I'm like, I hate you.
Yeah, don't say that.
That's the last thing I need to hear.
Even a regular handshake's not the best, but a Sailor's Handshake's way worse.
Sailor's, she calls it the Sailor's. I'm like, okay, I'm going to prove you wrong.
Nice. I hope you do.
Did you say the name of the doc in case people see it at a film festival coming out?
Oh, it's called Paul Pope THB.
It's on
YouTube now, so you can just, you know, type in my name, Paul Pope, and THB. And then I got to do this. It's like Instagram. I'm Comics Destroyer.
Yes.
One word, as in I'm here to destroy comics and rebuild it.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. So yeah, man. I mean, that's it.
Awesome.
Get out there. Great to talk to you. Great to catch up with you and tell that story to you.
I love it.
Believe me, I love that time. I love this.
Will you read that one more time? I can't believe I came up with this.
Like, nailed it. You had been doodling for like an hour, and then you just said that to me, and then you no discussion. You just said that you were also talking to me while you were drawing this about random shit, and you were just, this is coming out of you. But the line is, the Minotaur couldn't help being born a monster, but he still suffered the fate of the vanquished.
Wow. Oh,
and look at that fucker!
Come on, unbelievable!
I thank you for the removing some of the asbestos in my brains, because now that we're talking about it, I remember it, and it's great.
Yeah,
I appreciate it.
You bet, man! Great talking to you.
Yeah, thanks for all your amazing work.
Run into you again, but I believe that I will at some point.
Sure, at some point. I mean,
come back on when in July.
They'll find out. Yeah, they'll find out. Okay, we'll be in touch.
Awesome. All right. Have a good
one. Okay, thanks, guys.
Yeah,
okay.
Take care.
Pop up, everybody.
Yeah, come on.
With the total THB out on stands right now.
That's amazing.
Coming soon, as you heard about. And let's jump right with our very patient final guest for the night. Sorry to keep you waiting. But he has a book that he's written called Big Shoulders. Please welcome out John Dudley.
Yay! Welcome to the show.
All right. Hey, guys. I love listening to that. Paul Pope. Holy cow.
Yeah, right? Oh, my gosh.
And so, John, we were drunk in a bar, too, and I have this thing. Just kidding.
If only. I actually pulled my Battling Boy. Was looking at these today.
Yes, yeah.
And I heard him, like, the way he, you know, there's something going on with Battling Boy. I was like trying to talk, even though I wasn't on the show yet.
You're like, say more. You jump in from the top rope.
What do you mean by that, sir?
Yeah. Answer the questions. Now, but let's talk about Big Shoulders, because you sent us a copy of this. I loved reading this. This feels like such a lived in world, something that, feels like very close and personal to you. So tell us the premise and tell us about the book.
Yeah, thank you. So it's a crossroad. It's a story about crossroads. I had kind of several stories in mind and decided, like, why not do them all? Nice. So not quite an anthology. It's really because these stories are happening concurrently, and being a crossroads story, they're literally crossing paths. You'll see that as it progresses. And in some cases, they're going to collide, or in some cases, they're going to, you know, add some momentum, add some sparks, cross-pollinate a little bit.
Yeah.
And then in other kind of surprising cases, spoilers for pages that haven't come yet, but in some surprising cases, they're just going to cross right on by when you think they might collide.
Oh, interesting.
That's kind of a motif we're working with. It's six issues in total, and the first issue's out now.
Yeah. If I just wanted to talk a little bit. I love the use of color and shading and tone. Really just helps kind of tell the story, but also just like such great kind of like almost jump out of your seat moments. Like the ending was just so badass. I love the broken oar moment. Like, just, can we talk a little bit about like how you kind of wanted it to feel and to kind of, because I love the vibe of the book. I wanted to spend so much time there and just kind of hang out. It was great.
That's awesome. Thank you. Yeah. And I gotta say Scott Gray, the artist and co-creator on the book, really is responsible for that energy. In fact, his color work, he colored most of the book. And that's actually why I wanted to work with him. I was looking at some of his prints. If you're watching on YouTube, I guess see. He's done a lot of work on Doctor Who magazine.
Nice. Oh, yeah.
Mostly as a writer, actually.
Oh, wow.
But then seeing, I mean, he's just kind of a, you know, one of those guys who can do it all. his use of color was so awesome. That's really literally what caught my attention and made me want to work with him. And he brought that to the book. And Broken Oar is one of the storylines. That's a band. And we get to see how they get that name.
Yeah, it's so badass.
Yeah, yeah. We get a little legend in the first issue. It's kind of a little bottle story that their story will continue, but we get that part in the first issue.
So, and do you work for the city of Chicago, or are you, what's your game here with Chicago? I feel like you're trying to get us all to come there.
Yeah.
It's a Chicago love of Chicago book here.
Right. It kind of is. It's a love letter, you could say. It's very baked in, you know, the city of big shoulders, you know, from the Carl Sandburg poem.
Yeah.
I'm not even from Chicago. I've lived here 16 years. But it's a found home for me. Nice. You know, and it's, I've married into it. I'm here. I'm raising little Chicagoans despite having never been here till after college. But it's the kind of place where that's like people, you know, nobody's like telling me like, oh, you're not Chicago. You know, it's a crossroads city.
Well, and I feel, I mean, literally, because it's in the middle of the country, it's like the crown jewel of the American crossroads. And we were, you know, talking to Paul about New York. I feel like Chicago's a town like that. Anytime I've been in Chicago, I know a lot of Chicago people through the comedy world. And it's a town that loves its art. It's a town that, like, comedy is king in Chicago. It's a town where people feel like, in that same way that New Yorkers are sort of like, I like this. Chicago has that. In a more, not to knock New York, but in a more elevated, like, passionate art way, I feel like. But, I mean, you live there. Tell me, am I romanticizing it or not?
I do kind of, like, play it up a little bit. I've got a little intro in the print version of the book where I play into that a little bit. But, it's known as a place for stage time. You know, it's not... the producer's not going to be there, you know, like you're not like playing for like, you know, like the home run. Like I heard Stephen Colbert say that, you know, he was at Second City Comedy, like every other comedian. It's a place for stage time, whatever kind of variety of art you're in. It's a place to hone your craft. And then it's also a place that's very well known for their artists leaving.
For the love of the game. And then, if you get called up to the major.
For the love of the game, Chicago forever, go Cubs. And then like,
pew. Yeah, I got SNL later. and another thing in here that I feel like, I mean, it's embarrassing to ask, but Giardinieri, this is, can you?
Oh, cool. Oh, that's
can
funny.
Can you talk it up a little bit, what it is? I've eaten this before, but it definitely felt like I don't know exactly what I'm putting in.
It's Giardinera.
Giardinera.
And it's apparently an Italian thing, that anywhere you go in Chicago, it's just a condiment, you know. I mean, you got ketchup, mustard, giardinera.
And it's dogs.
Like, chopped peppers. They put it, it's on pizza. It's, if you go to like a Subway in Chicago, they have it, you know, like America, where everything is, you know, we're all doing the same thing more or less, but it's a funny little thing. You just don't see it elsewhere, and sandwiches don't taste right without it.
And you're saying Subway's like the best food in Chicago?
Yes, correct. Yeah, please come to the local Subway.
Our fabulous
support
Subway.
Your local
Like Michael Scott goes to Sbarro in New York, right?
Yeah, exactly. Best pizza in town. Certainly the biggest slices. Yeah. The Sbarro in, you know, by Madison Square Garden is a place where you can see a fight all the time. So just
that ain't nothing.
Next time. No, that's not nothing. But like another thing that really struck me about the book is there's so much history that you touch on. A lot of books that come out will use history to really like get, I would argue, often too deep into it. You use such a light touch here with it in a way that feels like you're just, again, excited about all of these ideas that you are bringing together in this Crossroads story. So can you talk about how that came together and the elements you were pulling?
Yeah, I was having a lot of fun with that. So I majored in history in college. I'm a kind of a history nerd. There it is. Yep. And I didn't work for the city of Chicago, but I did get my master's in public administration. So I'm doing unofficial work.
That's pretty close.
Yeah. But I wanted to use it as a springboard, like you said, not necessarily to dwell, but to create a little point of interest and then tell a proper story from there. Yeah. You know, let the reader do their own homework. If a little fun fact or a little piece catches their interest, I think is better than, you know, a bunch of boxes describing things in great detail that get in the way of the story.
That's awesome. And that, I will say, that really comes through.
It really does.
And so this is a 6-issue series you have planned?
Yeah, 6 issues. We've plotted the heck out of it. And we've got some really fun things we're working on already for the second issue. Awesome. But we're slow. You know, this is not Scott or I's full-time job. So I'll say that now, we're slow. We did get a pre-launch page up for the second issue for Kickstarter. And I actually haven't even really publicized that fact. It's live. If you guys want to hit that notify button, anybody listening.
Yeah, let me get to pull the Kickstarter page. It's not the number one Kickstarter, but it's the number two. There's a second issue Kickstarter, you're saying.
Yep.
Great. And, I'll pull it, but keep talking about it.
Yeah, not only that, actually for right now, I've put the whole first issue on Global Comics, so the digital reader.
Oh, cool.
For anybody who might be interested, it's all there. I can't promise it's always going to be there. But I've went ahead and put it there, and I haven't publicized that either. So that's breaking news for today.
Breaking news. Yeah. We're dropping a lot of exclusive work.
Yeah, we're getting some real scoops here.
There's the Kickstarter page in the comments. You can check that out. Earlier today, you sent me some other stuff that you're working on that I thought was really fun as well. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, books that are not for sale. Some of my short works. I've set up a Substack, just kind of talking about making comics. And being a comics writer, you have to have a Substack. And so do us.
Dropping that in, and it's literally called Making Comics.
Yeah, to make it easy, Making Comics. And I put some of my short stories there. I've kind of had some fun over the years with different genres, working with various artists. And I the very first post of Making Comics, I shared a sci-fi story I really enjoyed called The Great Reach. I'm very proud of that one. I think it just has a fun sci-fi hook, but it's not for sale anywhere. It's just another free story y'all can enjoy.
Oh, nice. Cool.
That's awesome. John, thanks for being here. We'll let you go. We have Big Shoulders. The first issue is out.
Check it out. It's really great.
Definitely check it out. I really enjoyed it. Is there anything else you want to plug while you're here?
I guess one last thing. At time of this recording, November 18th, on Saturday, I'll have a booth at, it's called Warrior Con. It's a new comic convention in the Chicagoland area, at a high school, in Des Plaines. Cool. They've got some really cool guests, mostly, you know, Chicago area comic creators. And that'll be the first convention in Chicago where I'll be selling Big Shoulders. So
that's awesome.
We'll see.
I hope it goes well.
Really,
man.
Fun. Yeah, please come back and tell us more about how that goes, especially as you sort of get closer to the end of the first arc here. It's really exciting to read this. So I can't imagine for you.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, it's nothing but pure love in the book. I hope y'all dig it. And I've been listening to the Comic Book Club for a couple of years now, so this has been real for me. Yeah,
well, thanks, man. Appreciate the support,
Pete. I got my Wonder Woman coffee mug in solidarity with your shirt.
Oh, come on, man! I love it.
God. I know everyone has. Yeah, where is she?
She invisible jet. It's hot.
Oh, okay.
If it's hot, she appears. It's like one of those, you know, those pins, those naughty pins.
Yeah.
Kind of. Yeah. She's clothed.
All right, good. Clothed. Good. Keep it respectable.
Pete, I got that nude Wonder Woman mug.
I have it. You ordered 100 of these.
Yeah, you wanted these, right, Pete? Not now.
I really appreciate you guys, and thank you so much for having me on.
It's a pleasure, man.
I mean it. Come back again. We love having people on who are doing stuff. And that's
congrats on your work, man. Love what you're doing.
Thanks, guys.
Good luck at the con. We'll talk to you soon, John.
Take care.
That's John Dudley with his book, Big Shoulders Number One. Woo! Very fun stuff. Oh, look, Pete is tired from all this. Hey, I got bad news, Pete. This show isn't over because it's time for our favorite section because you guys make it up. It is your audience question.
Let's get it.
Answer some questions. Pete spilled beer. Pete, what is the beer that you're spilling all over yourself? It's important we ask that.
Well, I'll tell you what. I don't have a garage, but I got garage beer. You know what I mean?
Nice. I've heard that about you. That's becoming a catchphrase. I'm drinking a little Modelo Especial.
Ooh.
Is it a special night? That's what special means?
I got to drink all these so then I can get to these. Oh, yeah.
What are those?
It's the Godzilla. Yeah. It's Godzilla on a beer can. I have to buy it. I mean, people mentioned it in the chat. Or in our Discord. So thanks, whoever posted that. I bothered my beer store for months being like, when are you guys going to get this? It finally happened.
That's fun. What a great customer you must be.
Oh, man, I am so cool.
Yes, definitely. John Dudley in the private chat, I had a Daisy Cutter IPA in my Wonder Woman mug. Very good. That's why Wonder Woman wasn't there, because that beer was too cold. Derek Maynard asks, where Alex at?
Where Zalbatron?
Yeah. He's doing thing. He's doing a family thing. He's being a good family man.
He's like in charge of little people. And unlike him, Justin, I mean, he takes time aside for his family. You're like, hey, after the pod, I'll love you again.
Certainly. I'm like, okay, you guys get to watch TV tonight. School night. They're watching, they're on minute 73 of just hosing television.
Nice.
So Alex is just being a good man. It came from the radio says, question, will you guys be at Big Apple Comic Con this Saturday? I have to work this weekend. So I cannot be.
What are you doing? Are you a line producer somewhere or what's going on?
A little bit of that, a little bit of something else. I am doing another opera role at the Met Opera House.
Oh! I'm
doing a cover role, so that's been taking up a lot of my life.
Wow, that's fun.
Yeah, it's fun. So I can't go, and Pete can't go because I think he lives in Middle Earth now. Is that correct?
That's right, man. York, PA, bro. I lost the new and kept the York.
Nice, yeah. He got too old for New York.
So that's right.
York.
That's the thing that I'll tell you about New York, man. You get to a certain age and they're just like, why are you still in this bar? And it's like, oh, man, really? I got to go. And they're like, man.
You got to go.
You're depressing me. I'm trying to drink and have fun.
You got to go. There's no sad old men in bars.
Yeah, that's right.
That's for sure. Question that we get all the time, Eric MCI, what's the last thing that made you have a total hole release?
What?
What's the last thing that blew your hair back, Pete? What's the last thing that really made you go? It made you happy?
Oh, I tell you what. For the first time ever on Instagram, I reposted something because I was laughing so hard, and it was JT Sizzle in a scarf. Your what is it? Fall monologue or whatever that character. Dude, I was blown away by that. I showed it to my whole family. And I was like, you know, Justin, the guy I do the podcast with. And they're like, yeah, we know.
Yeah, I've finally found a fan in you.
Oh, man. I watched that thing over and over again. It is so funny. The horse line kills me every time.
That's really funny that you say that. For those of you who don't know, I do a show called Characters Welcome, where I do characters with a bunch of other great performers. We do a live stream right here on StreamYard, actually, on Wednesday nights. But you can come see that if you want to. And this is a character I did, a personification of Autumn, yeah, talking about how Autumn's reinventing himself.
Were you wearing three scarves? How many scarves was that character wearing?
I was wearing two scarves.
And okay.
Honestly, that's my headshot now. So that's just a little look into how I've fallen off being an actor in a serious way. It's funny talking to like actual actors. I'm like, oh, yeah, I audition sometimes. Michael T., where is your favorite subway? Great question. A-Train. Mm-hmm. A-Train here in New York City.
Yeah. I used to swear at the F train all the time. I'd be like, oh, I got F'd by the F train.
I think Michael's asking about your favorite Subway sandwich shop, Pete.
Because, well, it's no longer.
Everyone knows I'm a direct subs man.
We used to have a Subway underneath the pit that I used to frequent all the time, but now I'm a Jersey Mike's guy. So catch me there.
He's gone country and your taste improved. what's the craziest merch you ever got from Schuykler?
The Schuykler.
I mean, it's hard to beat this Pulp Hope print that he literally made. I love to tell him that story and have him like slowly remember and be like, oh, that was a wild time. It was like very gratifying to have that happen. But other crazy merch, Pete. Other crazy merch.
I mean, you know, shout outs to Aaron and John. They once got me the Punisher's jacket. Like it's a tactical jacket that was used in the Punisher TV show that I have like sealed and, under, high laser protection.
Wow. That's really cool. I mean, while we're talking about merch that was gifted to us from those same people, these are the socks that have our heads on.
That's awesome, man. You still got those?
I was on set today working and so I was like, oh, are those socks? And
you're like,
my
three best friends is what it is.
Yeah, my three best friends, one of which is me.
We no longer look like that, unfortunately. Those socks are lies.
That is so true.
Yeah.
From Bad Guys over on Twitch, favorite Ghost Machine title? I'm torn among Redcoat, Geiger, and Hyde Street and need some guidance on which one to favor the most. Well, it's funny that
that's
you say
my top three right there.
Yeah. It's funny to say which one to favor because they're so different. It's wild to me how Jeff Johns is writing Redcoat and Hyde Street. That Geiger, I think, is a little bit more straight over the place superhero fare. That makes sense. But Redcoat and Hyde Street are so different. And you can feel, I feel like you feel how much he's loving writing these different types of stories. And for me, it's Redcoat. Something about Redcoat is just like,
I think
got under my skin and hooked me.
I think what's the great thing about Redcoat is every time you read it, it's a surprise. It's the same but different. It really does very unique and interesting things each issue. Hyde Street is such a great examination of characters and evil and good. And like they do such a creepy, amazing job with the artwork.
And it's a horror book, something that you don't like.
Yeah, but it's still like great. Yeah. We're going to be talking about a horror book in the stack tomorrow that I couldn't even get through. But what I love about Geiger is it's just this kind of steadfast, like badass dude with a two-headed badass dog and just, you know, like save the world, bro. You know what I mean? I'm along for the ride. This is glorious. So yeah, they're very different and very unique, but really work well under the Ghost Machine title. I mean, they're killing it over there.
Yes, indeed. Michael T says, after the pod, I'll love you again. Needs to be on a t-shirt. Truth. That is true. Eric MCI explaining.
Get that for your kids, bro. You know what I mean? Just have them wearing it around. That'd be hilarious.
In the same episode a few weeks ago, Total Hole Release and Ghost Suck Soup. Ghost Suck Soup is something that I had forgotten and I do want to say more of. Because that's Ghost very sucks. Ghost Suck Soup. I forget why that happened, but it was very fun.
That's the thing about some of our bits. You know, they're like, wait, how did we get there?
They live and die very quickly.
Yeah.
Frederico Rosa, do you guys think you've been more negative lately or have movies been worse? I was listening to the Eternals podcast and I felt like I was more, it was more positive than most of this year's. Wow. That's an interesting take. That may be just like Marvel afterglow. Because remember, Eternals was sort of like when the wheels were coming off of the whole project. So I think we were like, But I would agree with you that Eternals is a worse movie, or movie I enjoyed less than all of the movies from this year.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I also have noticed that I'm the positive one, which is very weird.
Very weird, yeah. I also think that I like this idea of movies been worse. There have been like some real kind of ups and downs with movies lately. It's been a minute since I was like just so excited to go see a movie in a theater, you know? I mean, the last couple of times it's like, all right, I'll go see this, you know? But yeah, it's been a while since I've been kind of really blown away in the movie theater.
I think we're all more overwhelmed with content, so it's harder to sort of get full whole release, if we can use the vernacular. But I one battle after another I really enjoyed and was very excited to see that in the theater.
Oh, I can't wait to see that streaming, but...
Yes, that's very good. I'm very excited for Marty Supreme coming out.
I heard good things about that,
so that should be fun. So I don't know. It's hard to say things are generally getting worse, but maybe it's just...
I was all excited about Running Man, and then Zalbin was like,
You don't have to listen to all of his... I mean, you have to listen. But you don't have to take all of his opinions. Go see it. I bet you will like it. I've heard it's actually very good. It just has some parts that are a little blockbustery, which he might bother him. Stanley says, do you like any holiday movies like It's a Wonderful Life? I love It's a Wonderful Life, and I watch it every year, and I cry every year. So you nailed me on that scene.
Yeah, I do the same thing, but with Die Hard.
Nice. Yeah. Look at us, the same. And lastly, Federico, which character do you think has the best death story?
Ooh.
Best death story. Tough, obviously. Punisher turning into Franken Castle.
Oh, how dare you bring that up?
Worth memorializing. Death of Superman sticks out because that was like the one, the first big one that was like, whoa.
Yeah, but I felt like Death of Captain America really changed the game for me as a reader. You're right. Death of Superman was this huge thing. Like, people going to the comic book store don't go to the comic book store. You know, they had that foil wrapper with the symbol on there. Like,
well, I'm not even talking about that. I'm talking about the story itself. I was like, it was back.
Well, it was a big event. It was a big.
Well, but the like four supermen emerged, and it's like, oh, what is this? What could this be? And the way that it happened was, you know, we talked earlier about mythology and how comics are modern mythology, and that story feels like sort of an Iliad type story to me.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I just think that like what I loved about the Death of Captain America story was seeing like Bucky as Captain America was such a cool, interesting moment. That only happened after something that I didn't want to happen. It was like, why would they do this? And then it was like, so like, oh, wow, this is so powerful and unique. So, there's a lot of amazing deaths. Also, like so many amazing comics that kind of deal with death and talk about death. And, you know, I think of the Too Cool to Be Forgotten always just made me cry. And it was such a great kind of way to talk about death. Yeah.
Deep cut. That's it for your audience question.
I just want
contributions. Oh yes,
Schoichler says Pete watches all the Hallmark Christmas movies. Maybe I have seen a lot of them, but that's just because I have a love for rom coms.
It's time for a little section we call trivia. We turn the show over to our resident madman. Who each week creates a web of increasingly insane nonsense and brings
it
to people. And all you have to do is sit, listen, occasionally type a letter, and it will be obvious which letter that is, and then you will win $25 free dollars $25 free. All you gotta do is say me. Put your hand
$25 free to Midtown Comics online, not just $25 or $25 free. It's a gift card to a comic book shop because you know if you had $25, you'd want to get some comics. So Kurt Jensen, we need a first hand up.
While we're waiting for first hand up, Kurt Jensen says we had Dan Jurgens in store for Death of Superman that night was crazy. That's a story I'd like to hear from Kurt Jensen. And of course, Schuckler says, secretly, I literally have one of the Hallmark channels on in the background. In fact, that he knows there's multiple Hallmark channels. Wow, this guy's talking.
He's in deep. While we're giving shout-outs, Amber Love was in the comments earlier. That, believe it or not, JT says, Amber Love, one of the first interviews I ever did at New York Comic Con many, many years ago. I was so nervous, and she was just so awesome. Really helped me have the confidence to run around Artist Alley and do that. So I want to give a lot of thanks to Amber Love. Yeah.
Shouts on shouts. Meanwhile, we have a person named David Quinley who says,
hey, DQ.
Oh, and you got that Amber Love in the comments. Shout out. Love, love. And a final question. Do you miss Alex? No comments.
Always.
Pete, trivia.
Pete. All right, here we go. Today's trivia, it's about the comic The Sacrificers and a small nod to the legend Penelope Milford, R.I.P. Please listen to all four options before making your selection because whenever Zelvin goes away, I have some fun with the trivia. And for today's trivia, you can, instead of picking one of the answers, you can choose fun fact. And I will, in fact, tell you a fun fact.
Oh, well, that's nice.
Yeah, you know, mixing it up. When Zalbin's away, you know, I gotta have some fun. So here we go. Question number one. Here we go, DQ. Who is the writer on the amazing comic The Sacrificers? Is it A, Rick Remender, B, damn it, I can see right through you, C, John Cheer, or fun fact?
Ooh. Interesting that people have to say go for the fun fact and then hear fun fact.
Yeah,
that's really good. I'm starting to worry that maybe the fun facts are about me.
Ooh,
starting to worry. About
why would that worry you? You know what I mean?
Because you're a controversial man. Hmm. You know.
I don't know if that's true.
Dude, wow, a lot of people really push it for really. The fun fact.
You know, I can share the fun facts afterwards if people don't want
to
pick.
No, them. I think people have to pick the fun facts.
Oh,
that's
okay.
How trivia works, Pete. It's not a free-for-all, okay? Mm-hmm. DQ, really thinking about this one.
Yeah, DQ, I'm a little worried about why it's taking so long.
A lot of people came from the radio. Fun fact, David Quinley. Curtis Archangel, do what's funnier. That's our usual.
That's how comedy works. All right, Quinley goes with A, which is correct. Rick Remender. Correct. Well done. Here we go. Question number two. Who has a quest for revenge in this absolutely fantastic comic? Is it A, Pigeon, B, You Sound Like a Hilarious Action Star, C, Chuck LaFont, or option D, The Fun Fact?
Ah, nice. People really want The Fun Fact. D Quinley says Dairy Queen. That's me. That's great. Dairy Queen still open in upstate New York.
Oh, man.
Blizzard Lives.
Dude, I got DQ by me, bro. It's a problem.
Ooh, interesting. I'm going to add that to my map where I'm slowly triangulating your home. Nearby DQ. Dude,
they have a special where it's like a sundae and a hot dog, and I'm just like, man, it's hard to turn that up.
Oh, wait, are you living in modern day, or are you, in the 1950s? Because that's going to be hard to find. No wonder we can't get invited over. David Quinley goes with A.
He goes with A, which is correct, by the way.
That is correct.
Pigeon is on a sick revenge quest in this comic. Here we go. Last one. In case you were wondering, Justin, that was the Justin fun fact question. Here we go. Question number three.
We
got to
hear this.
Who might be considered one of the big villains in this gloriously artistic comic? Is it A, Harlos the Sun God? B, Your Name Just Sounds Dirty? C, Mike Punt, or D, fun fact.
Michael T, now I really don't want to know any fun facts.
Ooh, Michael T going the other way.
A lot of people just really applying different types of psychology.
Yeah.
Kurt Archangel just saying it's definitely D. really trying to get to that fun fact any which way you can.
Curtis, man, that guy's...
The fans, the chat is very persistent. Perseverance.
It's great when the chat's going off, you know what I mean?
We got some folks. We had a great guest, great fun show.
Yeah. And the people in the chat are a part of that, you know what I mean? They help us along the way.
Honestly, it keeps me going fresh. Michael T is now suggesting, hey, Chris Archangel pressure on the D. Pete, you've been able to create a sort of feeding frenzy here. I don't know how you did it. 20 years into you doing trivia, this shit is popping off.
Maybe I figured it out. I don't know.
Nice.
He goes with A. That is correct. Harlos the Sun God. Thank you. We'll send us an email and we'll send you your $25 Midtown Comics gift card.
Yes, please email us at comicbookclublive
@gmail.com
and we will respond with that gift card. As you know, damn it, DQ. Pete, now how do you feel about sharing the fun facts? Is it feel like it's not cool or is it cool?
I definitely have no problem sharing the fun facts. I'll read all three if you want. But, of course, if people want to know what movie I'm referencing in all my C answers. And, of course, it's the 1989 cult classic Heathers.
Oh, wow. Oh, someone called that earlier.
Oh, really?
Michael Tillman. This has got to be Heathers, right? Great job.
Oh, wow. Tillman, dude.
Schuykler must have got absorbed in his Lifetime movies. He's got, like, 9 monitors showing all the Lifetime movies. great. It looks like the people are saying not interested in the fun facts. You have to save them for the future.
Oh, wow. Well,
Derek Maidhart, it's not fun now. A lot of people feel a little hurt. A lot of people feel a little betrayed.
Oh, man. That's funny.
You know what else is funny? That tomorrow is new comic book day.
Do you want to know the fun facts? I mean, come on. Let's give it to him.
It's still fun.
I did the work. Here we go. Fun fact. Penelope Milford, the first fun fact, question number one, co-wrote and co-starred in a play, which everyone was naked, called The Second Hottest Show in Town.
Ooh, second hottest.
And the JT Sizz fun fact, JT Sizz in 2009 won the Best Writing Award in the New York Television Festival for his pilot, Homeschooled. Come on.
That is true. Homeschooled.
What a cool fact that is. And then the third and last fun fact is it's impossible to hum while holding your nose.
Wow.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
I didn't think that.
I was like, what?
Yeah. I was like, truly, when you said that, I was like, I can do that.
Kurt Jensen, I'm only here for fun facts.
You can't do it.
Yeah. And wait, Justin, did you want to know the secret bonus fun fact?
Yes. How is that possible?
McDonald's once made a bubblegum flavored broccoli.
What? Have you been drinking Snapple? Have you been unfocused in Snapple facts?
I love those Snapple facts, dude. Those were good times back then. People who are just listening don't understand what's going on, but Justin's trying it. Oh man,
I really want to hum, but I can't because tomorrow is a new comic day, and we have to get out there and get some comics. Of course, there's a lot to look forward to. Pete, what are a couple things you're looking forward to?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm looking forward to is Wonder Woman number 27. Come on, epic! This comic is epic. Fuck that mouse. I'm having a great time. Also, New Gods number the mouse talks or whatever. Mouse, yeah, mouse man knows or whatever that creepy ass fucking thing. And then New Gods number 12 art is just unbelievable. Yeah. And then, oh man, One World Under Doom. Just very excited for that. Number 9. Just
nice. Wow. Coming. I think that closes it up.
Right, yeah. There.
A couple things I'm looking forward to. News from the Fallout number 6. That's I believe the final issue of that comic, which I really enjoyed. Big paranoia. A bomb goes off and the world starts to fall apart in the small desert town. The Spider-Man Holiday Spectacular by Rainbow Rowell. Very much looking forward to that.
Yeah.
Feeling a little bit of nostalgia. I'm ready to absorb a little bit of nostalgia from something like that. And then I want to hype a book that, in the midst of the Age of Revelation, a crossover that I feel like everyone's a bit perhaps mixed on. There's been one book that is very interesting and strange. It is The Radioactive Spider-Man, number 2. This is written by Joe Kelly, with art by Kev Walker, and I have been enjoying that. Did you put me in this?
I don't know. I was trying to type to Schuykler, and I hit something else. I apologize.
And yes, Derek, Lazarus, Fallen number 6, one of my favorite books on the stand. Wow.
And Twilight Zone was also sick, too.
Yes.
Derek Mainhart, good call.
It's a sick place to be. well, you know what, folks? That's the show. As always, you could do all the usual things like follow us on all of our things. You can listen to Comic Book Club News on a daily basis. Check us out on patreon.com/comicbookclub, or you can join our Discord where we are talking literally all day and night. I'm Apple, Android, Spotify, app of your choice. We're on Blue Sky Comic Book Club, Instagram, TikTok, Threads. Hit us up at comicbookclub.com for this podcast and so many more. What else next week? We have Alex DeCampi and Neil Edwards talking about 2018 Ghost Patrol.
Yeah.
That's going to be fun. We'll be back next week also with Alex Dalvin, the original daddy. He will be back. He will be here. Thank you so much for being here. Good night, folks. We'll see you soon.
Thank you. Take care of yourself. We need you out there.
Yeah, we do.